This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:07. You're with Kelvin and Hezril on the evening edition. First up, we're looking at the 35th anniversary of the Proton Saga, which was yesterday. In celebration, Malaysians have taken to social media to reminisce. On Twitter, for instance, many people have posted photos of their first memory with the iconic model. And it's a rather special moment because its production is a milestone in Malaysian history.
That's right. It was, of course, our first national car released back in 1985. And it symbolizes many things. For one, national pride. And it also spurred our automotive industry, proving that Malaysia is capable of producing its own cars. On top of that, it's managed to stay relevant over the years. It's the most popular model by the car maker. Over 1.8 million units have been sold.
Yeah, and to mark the anniversary, they're actually releasing an anniversary edition with only 1,100 units. It comes in black with yellow highlights.
Yeah, it's quite nostalgic, isn't it? My granddad personally used a lot of cars, so like Nissans and Toyotas, and it wasn't until recently that he bought a Proton, and it was actually his last one before he passed away. So I think in a way that illustrates how, at the end of the day, I think we're all quite fond of the Proton. I mean, it has been divisive, I think, over the years, but I think at least, you know, the original model is something that everyone I guess it is nostalgic about.
Yeah, and I just really want to, you know, besides looking at the nostalgia and stuff like that, really think about what Proton really represents and is today, right? Do young people, for example, moving on, do they still want to buy a Proton? And you know, according to them, at least, you know, at least 15 to 20% of their customers are millennials. And it seems like while the Saga at one time was used to be known as an uncle car, Proton said that this is no longer the case, right? Because it's become more technologically advanced. You know, I think personally for me, it's not, I'm not viewing Proton the same way, but that's not because of the brand itself, right? I'm viewing it from like, well, why do I have to buy a car? You know, the investments investments should be going into public transport, right? If I really were to get a car, you know, that may be at a point where I perhaps have higher levels of income, or, you know, I would want one that is more green, more an EV perhaps, if I can afford it sometime in the future.
Yeah, I get that. And I think what you said points to a crossroads, right? There's this question of bettering our public transport and becoming, I guess, a more smart, global, connected city that's future ready. And then there's also calls, I guess, for to use Proton as a jumping off point, right? To build off of our engineering capabilities, to grow the industry and to, I guess, try to maximize the potential of what Malaysian, you know, engineers can do and what they can do to push the limits of innovation, creativity, and ingenuity. So it's an interesting sort of tension that seems to be at odds with each other.
Yeah, yeah. So you can, of course, let us know. What's your first memory of the Proton Saga? Do you or your family members still own one? You can call us 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio, where we also have a poll running asking the question, are you proud of our national car? It's out of 61 votes, 42% are saying yes, 36% are saying it's complicated, and 21% saying no. To the 36% that said it's complicated, you can also let us know why you think so.
For sure.
I am certainly within that realm as well. And I think it's really just about my personal price sensitivity reasons. But again, you can let us know. After this, we will be speaking with Vijayaratnam Tharumaratnam, Director of Group Corporate Communications at Proton. Stay tuned for that conversation. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14 on the dot. You're with Kelvin and Hezrael on the Evening Edition, and we are celebrating the 35th anniversary of the Proton Saga.
That's right.
That was yesterday, but we're celebrating it today. Yeah. It's a belated birthday to the Proton
yes,
Saga.
Yes, indeed.
So we've just been essentially looking at you know, what the national car means at this stage, right? You know, whether or not there is still pride attached to it, and or, you know, in some instances, whether, well, all that investment that we had poured into Proton maybe at some point could have been channeled elsewhere. But, you know, it's rude sometimes to talk about someone's, well, to talk about certain things on someone's birthday, I think. But we are now, but you can keep, of course, sending in your thoughts about Proton, you know, whether or not you feel proud of our national car and whether you still own one, actually, or if your family still does, you can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
For sure.
In the meantime, we're crossing over to Vijayaratnam Tharumaratnam, Director of Group Corporate Communications at Proton. Vijay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Not at all. Thank you for having me on. It's nice to be back on.
So first off, how are you feeling about the 35th birthday of the Proton Saga?
So it's quite funny, right? I wouldn't consider myself to be particularly, soft about these things. But as we were running up to this and we were pulling out stories and all of that, I suddenly remembered what it was like. I was informed too. I was 14 years old. And I was a huge car fan. And so I remember then how excited, horrified, etc. I was. Because, first of all, consider that it had taken about a decade and a half for most people to not be embarrassed about buying a Japanese car at that point, okay? And because it was all European cars. So suddenly the idea of Malaysia going to make a car, oh my God, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, you had all of these conversations, but you couldn't help but be intrigued. So I actually wrote a piece about it on my LinkedIn, and it's amazing the kind of traction I got, not just from people of my vintage, but younger people. So I think it hit me in a strange way, in a way I didn't expect. And I think that's because at my age, for my generation, the saga was kind of many things that paralleled Malaysia, which was that it was going to be this great time forward. There was going to be Vision 2020 and, you know, I guess you could say we were that saga generation. So I'm feeling kind of good in the sense that I started to remember some of the, you know, 1985 Careless Whisper was top song and then Fashions and all of that. So cool. I've lived through an interesting time, I'd say.
And how popular is the model today, and how has that changed over time?
So, you know, so let's first talk about the popularity of the saga. So last year we grew, nearly 50% or something overall. But the most important part of our fleet is the saga because we sell the most of that, right? So the saga is the mainstay or the bulwark of our fleet. And what is interesting, though, is in terms of how the saga has changed, especially in the last iteration, you know, it's a lot more modern, it's got a lot more new technology, and it's a little sleeker. So I think, in a sense, the saga has gone from uncle car to kind of to a much, much younger demographic.
Right, and just going back as well, how does the car symbolize the progress and development of the Malaysian automotive industry?
So let's go back to 1985. Here's how you go. We had in 1985, I think we sold something like 67 or 68,000 cars in total, passenger cars, the entire volume. Last year in Malaysia, there were 550 something thousand passenger cars sold. Okay, so let's put this in perspective of 35 years. Of course, you can sit down and argue and say, this growth is not about Proton. This is about, you know, higher purchasing power, a better economy, etc. But in 1985, all Malaysia had was kind of glorified assembly. We had no automotive industry of our own. And what Proton did was that it started to build the capabilities and the strengths of that ecosystem in the supply chain. And that is what has gone forward, and it's helped all the manufacturers and all the players in the industry that have come after that and will come after this. So I think you've got to see Proton not so much about Proton and the saga, the car, but about how it was a catalyst for the automotive industry.
And how much weight does national identity have in driving the evolution of Proton style and ethos?
Oh, I mean, I think you can never... If there is one thing that you can say about the saga and Proton, it's Malaysian. And this is interesting because I was talking to a friend from Singapore the other day. And you know how we're all very self-appeasing, you know, Malaysians especially. And he turned around and said, no, I mean, the coolest thing that you guys have, when I think of Malaysia, I think of several things, but the Proton and saga is one of them. Because you were the first to talk about mobility and the importance of mobility for a growing society, not just mobility from a transport perspective, but mobility of society, etc. So the core of our identity will always be Malaysian. And, you know, it's always been there in some way. In the early years, the logo was the star and crescent. And then we switched to the tiger, which, you know, Harimau Malaya and all that. And now we still have the tiger, but it's obviously morphed. It's a lot sleeker. It's a lot more dynamic and it's very forward looking. So will the saga and the Proton continue to evolve as a Malaysian car with a Malaysian identity? The answer is yes. So is that a big part of it? Absolutely.
And I guess just going to the business side of it, how has Proton been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic?
I'd love to say that we haven't, but we were. You know, it's literally 2 months of the inability to sell, inability to make cars, etc. But it was also good because, I mean, we weren't sitting around. We spent that time looking at all the different possible scenarios and what needed to get done. And so we were constantly working. In fact, I like to joke that I found myself working harder during the MCO than normal. But I think we've been set back a little, but we should be able to get back to at least, I think if we can say, come close to last year, that would be a great result. Mm-hmm. The first full month of sales has been encouraging, right? So it remains to be seen. But, you know, this kind of black swan incident is really hard to say how far the ramifications go, you know. So I think we would rather look at the next 3 months and then we'll be in a better position to understand where we are at and how we're going to be affected.
Hmm. And are there plans to continue developing this model in the long term? If so, what can Malaysians expect from future sagas?
Well, first of all, you know, the saga has now just entered very, very haloed ground now. You know, it's really thin air now because there are not many nameplates that have been around 35 years, right? Mm-hmm. So the saga has now entered that whole pantheon of cars that have been around for longer than 35 years. And it is the mainstay of Proton, right? It is the car. So will we continue to have it? Yes. What will it be going forward? I think there is no doubt that technologies in terms of safety, in terms of autonomous driving, in terms of new energy forms, all of that. What exactly is that going to be? Can't say now. But you see, the core DNA of the saga is always going to be, number one, that it is affordable and it's reliable. And that it's, you know, authentic and honest. And so what that means is as long as we can stay, you know, in trend and within the parameters of what the customer needs at that point, that will be the saga of the time.
And what about Proton's overall direction moving forward then?
Okay, so I think we've been quite clear about this. You know, we hope to get to at some point to be number one in Malaysia and, you know, in a couple of years maybe. And the bigger goal is to be number three in ASEAN and by 2027. So I think going back to what Proton initially set out to do, which is to be, at the very least, a regional player. And we're making strides in that arena, and we will continue to go that way. I think we're looking at possible markets. You know, Proton already has a couple of export markets, but now we want to really start to look at this very strategically and, well, I'd say put a real focus on understanding what the customer needs in these markets. I mean, when people come back and say, oh, so Proton's a success story. How did you guys turn around and, you know, move back from fourth to jump up to number two and cross over to more than 100,000 cars and all that last year? I think the fundamental was that we were really customer focused, or we are really customer focused. You know, we sat down, we listened, we tried to understand what the customer wanted, what we didn't have, and then tried to fill that gap. The second point was quality, right? Quality was something that we really pushed hard, and we're really starting to see the dividends now. So, I think we, in short, going forward, you will see us make bigger strides, but some of them will be evolutionary, some of them might be revolutionary.
And speaking of revolutionary, I guess, one of the company's major achievements is its partnership with Geely. How will you continue to benefit from this moving forward?
So, you know, the global automotive market is played on two levels. You're either about volume or you're at the premium end, which is where you know, a luxury car or something. But the magic now in terms of the automotive business happens, A, in supply chain, and B, speed to market, and the ability to turn your product around, understand your customers quickly. Where it used to be that a typical life cycle was 7 years or something, that has been shortened immensely. And so having a partner like Geely is great because it allows us to utilize their heft, their supply chain, their they've been really good with SUVs and things like that. So we become part of the larger group, and then we can share and learn technologies. You know, Volvo is part of the Geely group. And so the big advantage is suddenly we have a lot more ingredients in the fridge, for want of a better word, right? And we can maybe start to cook a lot more interesting dishes, if I were to use this kitchen analogy.
And if I may shoot from the hip just a bit,
sure.
Whenever Geely is brought up, I guess, I just wonder if you get this question frequently, that with Geely in the picture, is Proton still a Malaysian car? You know, when you get those questions, how do you usually respond?
Oh, well, what is a Malaysian car? You know, what is an any car anymore? We live in a global supply chain system. There is no such thing as a Malaysian, Indian or Chinese anything. Right. So is Proton still a Malaysian car? I can tell you that 99.7% of the people who work for Proton are Malaysian. I can tell you that 51% of Proton belongs to Malaysia. And we are making and planning and building and strategizing cars for Malaysians, at least for now. So are we a Malaysian company? For sure. But I think when you think about transnationalism and MNCs and all of that, this idea of this is a Malaysian car or a Singaporean car or a Thai car, I think that's a bit archaic, right? Because if you write down a list of international car companies, I think you'll find that very few of them actually still reside in their original home countries.
Pivoting, I guess, to another issue, many car companies are diversifying their product pool to include more electric vehicles, right? I guess the pandemic has encouraged businesses to be more eco-conscious. What are Proton's plans on this front?
Yeah, so, you know, alternative energy is definitely something really important for us. But we need to understand where the country wants to go. If you look at the movement in terms of how some manufacturers pivoted to new forms of energy, whether there was hybrids and then onto EVs, etc. It was always driven by regulation, right? In Europe especially, the governments came down hard and said, guys, you've got 10 years, and in 10 years, this has to happen. I'm so sorry. And so the companies had to pivot. Let's be really honest. Nobody did this out of the goodness of their hearts, right? Nobody's going to want to spend a lot of money to completely overhaul their entire product line just to meet some new requirement. But the regulations came and they worked. And now, you know, everybody's forced to have a fleet, total CO2 emissions of less than 120 gram per fleet. So there are a lot of pieces in this puzzle. One of them is, what is the regulation going to be? Second part is, what is the ecosystem going to have? How are you going to fit in the infrastructure so that these things work? Because, okay, if I can't go fill up, now you go to a petrol kiosk and you fill up and it takes you 3 minutes, right? It's not going to be the same with an electrical car, for example. Mm-hmm. So as consumers, are we ready for that shift? Has the government put in these cases? So that, you know, like, these things don't happen in isolation. They happen in a concerted manner. And we have, as was said in the $6 million man, we have the technology. So it's a question of when, how, and deployment. And obviously there's a big element of cost. You know?
Vijay, thank you so much for those thoughts.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
That was Vijayaratnam Tharumaratnam, Director of Group Corporate Communications at Proton. We have the 6:30 news coming up. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:38. You're with Kelvin and Hezril on the evening edition. And we are talking and looking at the 35th anniversary of the Proton saga. Now, earlier we heard from Vijayaratnam Tharumaratnam, Director of Group Corporate Communications at Proton.
Yeah, and it was a very interesting conversation. Vijay touched on Proton style and ethos, which is in many ways defined by our own national identity. He stressed how it's Malaysians, has been, always will be, and that, you know, its first logo was a star and crescent, and now with the Malayan tiger, it's been able to translate that into the future, right? It's sleek, it's mm-hmm. forward-thinking, and that's been demonstrated via its partnership with Geely and trying to push boundaries tech-wise. And looking back, the saga itself was revolutionary because it essentially redefined the automotive supply chain, right? We have now the ability to assemble car parts ourselves. And I guess an interesting point that the saga has been around for 35 years. That's actually longer than if you look at international cars like mm-hmm. the Toyota Vios. That's actually been around for since 2002. And that's a very recognizable car on Malaysian roads too, right? So I think it's fascinating how long it actually stretches back.
Yeah, so because it has been around for so long, you can share your memories with us, right? What's your first memory of the Proton saga? Do you or your family still own one? You can call us 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also go vote on a poll that we have running on Twitter asking the question, are you proud of our national car? Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we're crossing over to Dr. Firdausi Sufian, political economist at UiTM Sabah. Firdausi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me there.
What is the significance of the Proton saga?
Well, if you look at Proton saga, to be honest, you know, Malaysia is the only country in Southeast Asia up until 2017, is the only country that have our own brand, that is Proton, right? So it is a bit of a it is so-called what they call national identity. Well, other Southeast Asia country, on the other hand, they have a bit different when it comes to automotive policies, where they have these backward linkages instead of they have their own national brand. Well, Indonesia did it, but it was a failed project. So if you look at, so that's how significant Proton is. Now, if you want to look, so that is the, sorry, if you look at Proton, right, mm-hmm. Proton Saga, it is the part of the government heavy industrialization program back in 1985, right? So the entire purpose, the overarching purpose of having this heavy industrialization program is to help Malaysia to move the value chain, meaning to say we move up from low value-added activities to medium and to more capital-intensive activities. So the government uses the national car project, back then was Proton, right, to move up the value chain. Well, they say, you know, most a lot of analysts in automotive, they usually will consider automotive industry as the industry of the industries. Why I say that? Because it involves 5,000 parts and component, number one. The spin-off effect of having car in the industrial, as part of your industrial activities, right, it will give a lot of spin-off effect. So because it involves the resource extraction activities, mm-hmm. where you need rubber, and then you have this manufacturing, and of course, service industries, particularly R&D. So that is why the spin-off effect is big. And the significance of the Proton also, if you look at it back in 1985, we do have vendors, but it's very limited. But look where we are today with Proton. We have a lot of established vendors. Today, if I'm not mistaken, it's close up to 700 to 800 plus vendors. All right. So with the vendors as well, and of course with Proton and also the creations of vendors, if you look at the recent National Automotive Policy 2020 stated that this Malaysia have created 700,000 jobs from the automotive industry. So that's how significant it is to Malaysia.
Right. And on the other hand, though, what lessons can we draw from the challenges Proton has faced over the years?
This is the interesting part. So, well, of course, the moment when they introduced the National Car Project, right? Sorry, I just have to go a bit of the history back then, right? So once they introduced this, Proton, well, we have different tax structure, all right? It's a bit of an uneven level playing field. And then of course, I would say it has a double-edged sword impact to the economy. On one hand, the government, because an infant industry, it is the most developing country, will impose higher tax, all right, to help the infant industry to grow. And then it helps the local vendors, it helps the local people, it helps basically the local businesses. But on the other hand, the negative implications of having Proton is that, I mean, that having this national car project is that, look, we have an uneven level playing field environment in automotive industries. And this is somehow once the moment when they introduced the national car project, so it has a policy legacy. See, so this is the problem when we have so it become an institutional constraint if you want to change certain things, because you already invested so much in a particular project. So for you to change it, we will face certain constraint, right? So the lesson that we if you look at Proton, right, the growth of Proton for the past 35 years now, right? So that's close to three decades. So I give an example, Geely. Geely was introduced in 1997, so not even close to two decades. They managed to go to the global market, right? So, but Malaysia, until for 35 years, we're still having problem export our cars. We can, but we can. Of course, we can, but still quite a lot of challenges there. Now, the lesson that we can learn also having Proton, right? Because we have a technological upgrading issues, right? We have economical scales problem. Mm-hmm. And previously, we have this partnership problem. You know, all these big brands like Range Rover, Jaguar, right? They're all owned by Tata, right? So, and then Volvo owned by Geely. So there's a lot of company basically come up with, they have a strategic partnership. But the problem with Proton, the lesson that we should learn is that not until 2017, yeah. So before this, so we have a partnership problem. But having a partnership also, we have to be careful because back then when we collaborated with Mitsubishi, so the agreement is to have a technological transfer, right? But it didn't really occur, number one. Number two, the agreement didn't really explicitly tell that, you know, this company, Mitsubishi, will help us to help our exports of our cars. It didn't happen, right? So I guess now, export is very important because when you talk about car, our total volume in Malaysia is only up to what? 600 over 1,000. So you cannot just depend on local market. You have to go beyond, right? So I guess these are the lessons that we can learn. The R&D, technological upgrading, partnership, we have to be very clear with who we work with and what are the terms and conditions, right? And of course, economic of scale. So I guess those are the lessons that we can learn.
And jumping off that point about partnerships, what about Proton's milestone partnership with Geely, which is expected to strengthen its technical capability? Do you think Proton will continue benefiting from it in the long term? And I guess with this partnership, where is it headed to in the near future?
Yeah, well, if you look at it, the partnership currently, this year we will have our CKDs with Geely. So CKD basically is where you're going to learn new technology, where they will transfer the technology. Well, I guess this is the opportune time for us to work with Geely. But it's just that, you know, a lot of people have this perception that, look, oh, Geely own Volvo. Perhaps Volvo, we can get technology from Volvo transferred to Proton. Well, I guess it's a bit wrong to think like that. Because Geely and Volvo, they do have certain agreement where they say that, you know, certain things belongs to Volvo and there are things that you cannot copy. You know, they have this kind of agreement. So, what I think that technology, yes, we can. That's why I say when we have this partnership right now, so. When we talk about technological transfer, right now, currently, the CKD, when we have that, when we build our own, that is a very important point. I think Proton have learned this before during their partnership with Mitsubishi. So I think they have to take this opportunity to work, really learn. And we cannot all the time playing catching up, right? Well, back then was a bit different because there's a bit of political interference. But now I believe no more political interference, right? So this is where we have to learn. We really, really have to learn and invest on research and development. We cannot just depend on partnership. Well, partnership is important. All right, but it shouldn't be the only way that we learn to improve our cars, but we have to invest ourselves, right? To do so, we have to go beyond domestic market. And I believe Geely partnership, as you can see, the SUV X70, we have, you know, sold like more than 5,000 cars. So from the sales itself, the money should be channeled to R&D, and we got to learn more to improve our technology.
Now, you know, looking beyond partnerships, I guess, is there anything the government should review to ensure that Proton can be a more competitive industry player?
So for Proton to be competitive, the automotive environment must have a level playing field, right? Well, of course, this is a bit, you know, a lot of, it's quite sensitive to talk about it, because when you talk about level playing field, then you should talk about, you know, reducing tax. And then, you know, usually competitiveness is linked to tax, because if you have, you impose higher tax, you know, somehow it creates an uneven level playing field. Well, I think there are things that the policies there in NAP 2009 until 2020, the recent one, right? The policy is already there to facilitate our automotive industries. We have industrial adjustment fund. We have industrial linkages program. All these are very good policy terms that actually help not just Proton, but the local vendors as well. Well, the key here is that when we want to implement this policy, we must come out with a competitive facilitating approach. What do I mean by that? Because Proton, we cannot just see Proton, the company itself. The key to the growth of Proton linked to the vendors. So the vendors are the one that actually help to grow Proton, right? So these vendors, when I say competitive facilitating approach, meaning say if they get certain funds from the government, right, if they cannot perform, you must discipline them. Meaning to say, if you don't get this, say you get 1 million, right, for industry IAF. And if you cannot come up with the project, come up with the product, then we will blacklist you, or, you know, you will not blacklist, perhaps we will reduce the fund. All right. For, let's give a time frame. Mm-hmm. So I guess the currently is more on implementing the policy is more crucial. All right. Because when we say about policies is already there, right? Terms of policy is already there, but it's just that the vendors, the government need to make sure that they have to discipline this vendor to move up the value chain. This is what the Hyundai and then the Hyundai government, the Korean government did when they want to help Hyundai, or what they call the Chaebol, you know, family link company. So they really discipline. Like SsangYong. SsangYong used to produce cars, but today you don't see them producing cars because, you know, they have problem because they cannot come up with competitive product. So this is what we need, competitive facilitating approach. You must discipline our vendors so that they will not take things for granted. Whatever privileges or preferential access to government resources, they will take it seriously and they will not take it for granted.
Firdausi, thank you so much for those insights.
All right, thank you.
That was Dr. Firdausi Sufyan, political economist at UiTM Sabah, talking to us about Proton. Keep sending your thoughts through. We'll be back right after this. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.